Hi, I'm Pat Bulmer with Labor Start. When you board a plane, the smiling staff that greets you directs you to your seat and then helps you stuff your overpacked carry-on suitcase into the undersized overhead bins isn't getting paid for that work. Your flight attendants aren't paid until the plane gets into the air. That's not fair. Some are fighting back, and I'm going to ask our guest about that and some other issues today. Rebecca Owens is a proud flight attendant and active member of her union, the Association of Flight Attendants CWA in Anchorage, Alaska, who recently accepted the role of mobilization chair for flight attendants at the airport. Thanks for joining us, Rebecca. And is it really true that you and your coworkers are expected to work for free on part of your shifts?
Unfortunately, yes, it is. So the start of the day, we're required to be at the airport an hour before the flight departs. And again, we don't start getting paid until the door is closed and we're rolling off into the air. So you factor in that you have to be there an hour early, which if you don't clock in time, even if you're 30 seconds past that hour, you accrue points towards being fired. So you're actually required to be there and can lose your job for it, but you're not getting paid. And then as it kicks up, boarding is one of the busiest parts of the flight. Not only are we welcoming you on board the flight, we're seeing how everyone's doing. We're looking for our potential folks that would assist us in emergencies. We're kind of identifying everyone that's going to be on the plane for that day because our job is centered around safety. So we're helping everyone find their seats and get their stuff put away, get our seatbelts on. That's all unpaid labor.
And as a passenger, that looks to me, the boarding and unboarding, to be the hardest part of your job.
Well, certainly. It's a pretty critical point, too. Most aviation incidents are actually survivable, contrary to popular belief, which is why it's so important that we make sure your stuff is stowed properly and make sure your seatbelts are on. Everyone's sitting in the places they're supposed to be sitting, that our exit row occupants are ready to go in the event of an emergency. There's a lot of planning that most people probably don't realize we're working on, even as, we're taxiing out. We do what's called a silent review, which is, all of your flight attendants are quietly sitting there planning what happens in an emergency. So where is my exit door? What am I going to, say? Where are all my emergency equipment, et cetera? So it's a pretty critical phase for us as far as safety goes. And again, it's all unpaid.
Indeed. The Canadian Union, CUPE, has an unpaid work won't fly campaign, and they estimate flight attendants spend a full work week every month working for free. How do you think about that estimate?
That's a pretty great estimate. For example, we follow a strange way of pay called TFP, and it's not hourly, but for example, a 10.5-hour day for me typically pays about 5 TFP. So if you factor it out into an overcomplicated math equation, I'm getting paid for about half my day, if you will. I think that week, maybe even more, is just unpaid labor.
And what is your union doing on this issue to try and get some change?
So we have, our contract became amendable in 2022, and we've been in negotiations for a little over a year and almost 4 months. And they're asking for better everything, if you will. They're asking for better hourly wages and varying, without getting into too much detail, because that requires its own master class to explain how our pay works, but essentially they're asking for better compensation, not necessarily moving to hourly pay, but closer to it, so that our days are more properly compensated.
And
they're also asking. It's just a lot of quality of life improvements. They're working very hard for us to get us into a better place.
Yeah, related to that, you took a strike vote in February that was resounding 99.48%, and you have the Pay Us or Chaos campaign going on. Can you fill us in on that campaign and the state of negotiations a little
bit? Absolutely. So our work group has not had to take this drastic of a measure in negotiations in 30 years. So when you look back at the original Chaos campaign, the flight attendants fought really hard for a fair contract, and the company just wasn't coming to the table. So here we fall under the Railway Labor Act, which requires us to have government permission, essentially, to strike. So we can't just walk out.
Mm-hmm.
That being said, ourselves and many other unions, or flight attendant unions, are stuck in a process where the companies are just continuing to stall. So the Chaos campaign that AFA uses started with Alaska Airlines 30 years ago, and it's a targeted strike process that only affects a very slim number of flights, but creates that doubt of, will my flight be affected? At the end of the day, none of us want to strike. None of us want to hurt our passengers or the flying public. We want these flights to go. The problem is our group can only hang on so long. So the Chaos campaign is a way to affect as little passengers and as little employed flight attendants as possible while still making that impact that says, take us seriously. This has to be amended. The AFA website has, if you Google the Association of Flight Attendants and Chaos, it brings you to a video and an entire website that explains the history and kind of the details. It's a really effective process that, again, we'd like to avoid. We don't want to go there, but we're prepared to if we need to.
And I hear you're also involved in a campaign to get paid sick leave on the ballot in Alaska. Can you tell me can you tell me about that issue and that campaign?
Yeah, absolutely. So currently at our airline, you can be penalized for using your paid sick leave. And this is earned sick leave. And depending on how close to the event you call in, so say I'm at that hour and a half and I get to the parking lot before my flight and I slip and fall, I accrue a higher number of points for calling out than I would if I'd called out, 12 hours in advance. And I know far too many people who have to decide if losing their job is worth staying home sick. So I'll give you an example. Probationary flight attendants in their first 6 months are only allowed to have what's called occurrences. They get 3 occurrences and they get fired. And in my second week of employment with Alaska, I got COVID from another flight attendant who was also brand new and afraid to call out. So I, in my first week, or excuse me, my second week of work, had one occurrence because I called out for having COVID. And then I had to spend the next 5.5 months worried and deciding, is this worth calling out for? And, there's two pieces of this that are important. First off, airplanes are tiny little tin tubes, and we're all in each other's space, right? There's no room to not spread disease, if you will. And so the idea that it would be a threat to stay home and protect yourself and others is asinine. But that being said, not only is it irresponsible to spread illness to people unknowingly trying to go on vacation or attending funerals or visiting family. It's also dangerous because any kind of pressure increases at altitude. So there's a whole science behind it, but essentially ear pain on the ground with some congestion becomes a ruptured eardrum at altitude and permanent hearing loss. So it's not only irresponsible and unsafe to the public, it's actually dangerous for us. And so what we're working on here is a bill to address protected sick leave. It's one of those things we earn. Not only is it responsible, but it's our right to use our earned benefits. And we'd like to see that legally protected. Mm.
I also heard a rumor that there is a requirement for appearance training.
It's not a requirement, but it's an interesting new reintroduction, if you will. And I don't have all the details on it yet. It's still newly brought out. But it's interesting when you look at the history of what flight attendants went through over the years and how hard those before me had to fight to get over appearance standards.
Rebecca, I've learned some stuff in this interview that I didn't know was happening. It sounds like some archaic labor relations standards in place there.
Very much so.
I appreciate this very informative interview, and the union movement and your co-workers are very lucky to have you, and I thank you for your time today.
I thank you for allowing us to have some more visibility. It matters, and it means a lot to us. So thank you for taking the time to talk to me and get some of this information out there.